everybody, and welcome to episode 154 of Rain Delay Radio, a baseball podcast. My name is Naim. Joining me, as so often happens, it is Pat to talk about the news of the week. How's it going, Pat?
Pretty good. What's going on?
Not much. Just a chill weekend. Cleaned out the garage a little bit. It was still chilly, but I'm going out of town next week because I'm off work for the Christmas week, so I can just like go take a little vacation. And so my mom was like, "We need to clean the garage." I'm like, "All right, I guess I'll do that." But it was 41 degrees, so that was not the most fun, but it's fine.
Yeah. Hey, that's all right.
Could have been worse.
Yeah.
All we've got today, Pat, is news. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about a big chunk of the last episode talking about the Shohei contract and all of that stuff. I'm glad that Dylan was on the episode to talk about the state of MLB journalism regarding Shohei Ohtani.
That was great.
Yeah. we do have a couple of the contract details that came basically, after the recording. These are talked to death, so I don't think there's a whole ton to talk about here.
Yeah.
But he will be deferring $68 million of his $70 million annual salary. So deferred payment starting in 2034 of $60 million a year. He chose this. Apparently, he pitched it to teams so that the Dodgers or whatever other team would continue being able to spend. So they only have $2 million on the books for the year, and their cap hit is something like $46 million, or their luxury tax hit, or whatever you want to call it. So he also has an option to opt out of the contract if either president of baseball operations Andrew Friedman or controlling owner Mark Walter are no longer with the team, which is a fascinating contract clause. It makes sense. I understand why it's there. And I would imagine that for massive of contracts like this, obviously, like Tony Kemp is not getting this in his contract, but a Bryce Harper type would be able to be like, "Oh, if we can do that, then I'm doing that."
Right.
You know,
100%.
I don't know who the next big free agent class is off the top of my head, but whoever is, when Juan Soto becomes a free agent next year, if the Yankees don't extend him, he's almost certainly asking for this, right? Like with whatever team he signs with.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it because you want accountability from ownership, and you want to know that, like, hey, if I'm coming on board, I want to know that you're not going to, screw me over and I'm not wasting my time here. So I like it. I think it's smart by Shohei.
Yeah.
I think Shohei approached this free agency very smartly.
Yep, absolutely. I think it makes a lot of sense. Obviously wild numbers and all that stuff you guys talked about last week, so nothing really to add there in terms of what this contract means. The deferral thing is nuts. Like
it's insane.
It almost, like, it's crazy to a level that, I could see teams being like, okay, this happened once and now we have to keep an eye on it because if it happens again, the CBA is changing next CBA. I think, they can like potentially get away with this being the only one, but this almost feels like when Albert Pujols signed the 10-year personal services contract and then they cut it out of baseball. To be fair, Ryan Zimmerman also signed one for 5 years. And I think it was the two of them that was like, okay, well, the combination of these two makes it, we're never going to let this happen again. But, I'd imagine for most players, like, why not do this, right? Again, to use Soto as an example, right? There's nothing that Soto can't get for a couple million dollars a year. And then once he's not on the team, what does he care, and Ohtani the same thing, right? So like
Ohtani gets to go to Japan and completely avoid the California taxes once he's done.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see about that. I don't think any expert on income tax law has really weighed in on that. I don't know how that exactly is going to work. But yes, it is very possible that that's going to happen, or something along those lines is going to happen. We'll have to see. But whatever does happen, it is a wild. I mean, to keep using Soto as an example, because he's the next massive free agent, because he's 25 years old. And a free agent next year. But like, Soto can go back to the Dominican, you know, like Soto doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Like, so I could certainly see a similar thing happening next offseason with Soto. And then suddenly in the CBA, like, other teams are like, hey, we don't like this. This is bad for competition. And it is. I mean, it is bad for competition. Like, it's,
yeah,
it is an anti-competitive thing of like, yes, we can give this guy $70 million a year, but not pay any of it. And thus we're taking like a luxury tax hit, but not an actual salary hit, and thus can pay money for it. Like,
right.
I don't see why, like, again, a guy like, I mean, I guess Soto has a ring, so Soto isn't going out and trying to get a ring, but maybe he is, like, you know,
yeah.
I don't know how motivated he is to go get a ring, but I think he wants to play on good baseball teams, or you know,
right.
You know, there's other guys, like, you know, Soto's just the example I'm using because he's the obvious next big one. But like, there's other guys like that who are certainly going to be chasing a ring, and like, oh, if I can chase a ring, like, who cares if I'm making $3 million now? That's plenty of money. And then I'll be making $45 million when I'm not playing baseball, which is arguably better, because you know, like, as pointed out, like, Shohei's gonna make a ton of money on endorsements and stuff during his playing career, especially playing for the LA Dodgers. So even if for some reason $2 million is not enough, which it is for anybody ever,
100%.
But even if it wasn't, he's gonna be making quite a bit more than that in you know, New Balance endorsements that he's already making the money on. So and which will probably go up now that he plays in, you know, one of the two biggest media markets in the country. Plus all the Japanese endorsements that he continues to have. So yeah, I wonder, because they didn't talk about this, but I wonder if, because it would make a lot of sense if Shohei gets some cut of the, like, Japanese TV rights to Dodgers games. This didn't get reported, but, like, you know, business wise, it would be a smart decision. Like,
it would be.
Hey, you're gonna sell your broadcasts? I should be getting a cut of that, because I'm the only reason that people are watching your games in Kyoto, you know?
Yeah. That would make sense. I mean, there's so much, like, when you are the most popular player in baseball and undoubtedly, like, probably one of the top players in history, you're gonna get these deals.
Yeah,
and
for sure
you're a hero in not just one country but two countries, so you're very marketable, and especially in Los Angeles you're even more marketable.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? That's the thing you can only get in, I mean, although, you know, of course he was already playing for the Angels, which are technically Los Angeles as well, but
right.
They're not.
This is the Dodgers.
This is the Dodgers. This is the Dodgers. I know.
This is one of the greatest teams in baseball history.
Right. Yeah. It's one of the most storied franchises. It's one of those things of, like, you know, like, of course he was going to sign with the Dodgers. Like, if he could make $700 million and not have to move, like,
why wouldn't he?
Because he could still just live in whatever house he was living in. It's, he adds maybe 20 minutes to his commute because it's Los Angeles. So it's going to be a 2-hour commute either way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So that's basically the last of the Shohei contract, unless we find out something extra crazy this week. I don't think there's anything we can learn at this point
I think we know everything now.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's everything is known. Unless we find out that Japan clause that I posited is a thing that actually exists. Because it should. I mean, it should. Like, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Although that might be, because I think it's possible that Japanese networks have an MLB contract, and it's not a Dodgers Pacific contract, because that might be like a thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's possible.
But That's Shohei. That's the Dodgers. That's not the Dodgers because we got more with the Dodgers.
The Dodgers. We got more.
They're not done. They're not done. They sure aren't. The Dodgers traded for and then extended Tyler Glasnow. They traded basically it was Ryan Pepiot and Johnny DeLuca for Tyler Glasnow and Manny Margot. That is a 5-year, $135 million extension starting this year, which includes a mutual option, which is, I think it's actually a club option for $30 million. And then if the club declines it, then it becomes a player option for $20 million for that sixth year. So a max value of 6 years, $165 million, with the off chance that the team declines and the player picks up the $20 million. I want to talk about the option structure for just a moment. This is a kind of neat option structure in a way. Like it's like, oh, this makes a lot more sense than most. Mutual options are always so odd because it's like, what player is accept? Like it's just like it seems like it's rare for both sides to want to accept a mutual option in most scenarios. So this creates a scenario where that you know if the team wants to pay him $30 million, then they pay him $30 million and they keep him. There's a very, very like there's a sliver of potential where you know the team thinks he's worth less than $30 million, but the player thinks he's worth more than $20 million. I don't think anybody thinks that potential is actually going to happen. It's either the team picks it up or the player picks it up or sometime before year five, they get together to discuss another extension because he'll be, 33 or 34, I think, at the end of the contract. So, like,
I believe so, yeah.
Depending on how he's been in the 5 years, we'll still have, you know, potential value for like another 2 or 3 year deal. So I think that's really the thought process is the Dodgers either think he's going to be a Cy Young candidate in 2027 and are going to pick him up for $30 million, or he's going to blow his arm out and he's going to pick a $20 million player option, or he's just going to be like, all right, let's just talk about it and keep you around for another 2 years and like, you know, like 3 years, 75 is what the extension is going to be at that point. I like this structure of what we'll call a mutual option, but it's structured a little bit differently than a standard mutual option. As far as the contract goes, I mean, look, this, you know, what I'll say is from a we talked a lot about the Dodgers pitching in the postseason of like, what do they have going on? This is not the Dodgers we're used to seeing. So, you know, they clearly want to not have that same issue. And you know, Otani is not gonna, I mean, I don't even know if he's gonna hit at the beginning of this year. I'm not sure how quick.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You would know, Pat. Well, maybe by the end of the year, what's the recovery time for a hitter on TJ?
So it took Harper a few months to get his swing really back and start hitting for power.
Yeah.
So like if Shohei's good to go opening day, you probably don't. So here's the thing. I don't know how it's going to be for a hitter having Tommy John a second time.
Right.
Because that's never happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're denying that it's Tommy John, but, you know, everything points to that was Tommy John. I don't know how quick that comes back. I really don't know.
Did he get surgery? Or is he still just like letting it?
He had surgery.
Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. I wasn't sure if I misremembered because I remember the injury happened. I don't remember if he actually had surgery or not.
From what I read with the medical report, he had full-blown Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like. Now, the Dodgers are denying it. Shohei's agent certainly is denying it.
Well,
so
I mean, like,
you don't
at this
know
point,
what's real.
At this point, there's no benefit to anybody. You know, what's the benefit to saying he didn't have it if he did have it, right? Like,
right.
I get what the benefit is, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, right? But at this point, like, unless it's I don't know. What's the benefit to lying about it? So maybe he didn't have Tommy John, but it clearly had something. I mean, he clearly had a torn UCL that had to get, or some sort of UCL injury that had to get repaired.
Some sort of UCL injury that they did surgery on. Maybe it was like the Tommy John that's not as severe, like what Rhys Hoskins had. But even then, like, it still took Hoskins a while to come back from that.
Yeah, and Hoskins doesn't pitch.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
so
I don't...
I guess we'll see. I mean,
I don't know.
Maybe, you know, Shohei will hit this season and not pitch, and then we'll pitch next season. Or maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll be able to pitch late into the season at some point. I don't know. But, you know, Glasnow obviously is going to be pitching this year and is going to be at the top of that rotation. What does the Dodgers rotation look like right now?
So if the season were to start today, it would be Glasnow, Miller, Buehler, Emmett Sheehan, and whoever the hell they choose to put in as the five guy. I guess Gavin Stone or
Ryan Yarbrough.
According
to FanGraphs, it's Glasnow, Buehler, Miller, Yarbrough, Sheehan. I mean, I don't think they're through, right? They can get a pretty solid pitcher on a not high contract and be okay with that. So like they only need like a five, but like, you know, Bobby Miller, if Bobby Miller continues to be good, which obviously the Dodgers want him to, you know, could be a good number two or three, like, and Buehler, if Buehler's healthy, obviously he missed a season and a half. So if he comes back and he's healthy, then that's a solid 1-2-3, and then you're 4 and 5 you can kind of play around with,
right?
But you're not like, you know, you're not banking on those being elite players. So, but yeah, especially coming off of last and this past postseason, right, where their pitching was just not what you wanted from it. And they still haven't re-signed Kershaw, so he'll slot in there for half a season. When once they give him money, he'll be their third or fourth starter, you know. So you know, or the first or second, depending on how healthy he feels.
Right.
Wow, he's still, I mean, he's only 35. He feels older than that because he's been around for so long.
He does. Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, I mean, look, he's still been Clayton Kershaw the last couple of years. He just hasn't thrown the innings that you need out of an ace. So,
right.
I think, Glasnow, Kershaw, Buehler, Miller is a great 1-4, right? Like that's
certainly, yeah.
That's what you want as long as your guys are healthy, which with Kershaw and Buehler, might be easier said than done. And Glasnow too. That's not three guys who are going to throw 200 innings in a season each, you know, like,
right.
Tyler Glasnow has never thrown more than 120 innings in a season. And that was last year. So who knows, but, it certainly has promise, and that's what they want.
Right.
Yeah. And then Manny Margot is there too.
And then Manny Margot. Yeah. He's the other guy that came over, which, good for him. He gets to go get out of the drop. And honestly, like, he has good away splits from the drop. So
yeah, and I wonder if that
like I can't see in the drop kind of thing is real.
He's a perfectly solid player, you know, and you know, he's aging a bit. So like, who knows what his curve looks like, but he's, you know, he's a solid,
a good defender.
He's a good defender, and he's not going to start in left field, is he? Who's their left fielder?
Jason Hayward.
Well, Hayward's a free agent right now, but yeah.
No, he's not.
Is he not?
He signed back with the Dodgers.
Oh, did he? I missed that.
Yeah.
Right now, according to FanGraphs, it's Taylor in left, Outman in center, Hayward in right, which would make sense. Hayward's a better right fielder. And then, you know, Margot as the fourth outfielder. Yeah, I mean, I forgot Mookie's playing second base next year.
Yep, he's their full-time second baseman.
Full-time second baseman. Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. And, like, and you know, Mar- go platooning with Hayward, which makes sense because Hayward is a platoon hitter now. And
right,
it feels like Manny Margot is actually a valuable trade, a valuable piece in this trade, as opposed to just like, yeah, let's move pieces around. He's going to be making money and the Rays can't be having that. So
yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be good there.
Yeah. Well, we're not done talking about Japanese pitchers because Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who is probably the second best free agent this offseason, had meetings. He's had meetings with four teams and then offers
from two.
From two or three. It's hard to really. There's seven sort of finalists is what we've been told. Meetings for sure with the Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, and Phillies, as well as he's had additional meetings with the Yankees and Mets. Giants and Red Sox have definitely made offers. We've heard the Jays are interested. Obviously, they... I mean, if you heard last week's episode, they own Shohei Ohtani for about 6 hours. he's expected to sign for Christmas for an 8 to 9 year deal with almost $300 million.
Dude, it's so much for like someone that hasn't come over. And like, I'm happy that the Phillies are looking into it, mainly because this is a market they don't get into it.
Yeah.
So it's good that they're now taking that effort. Like, hey, let's see what's out here in this market. Like, they gotta be doing something right over there in Japan, you know? Right. So I like it.
Yeah, and he's a guy. He's had a ton of success in Japan, and you know, coming off of like Kodai Senga, who had a really great year this year and was, you know, probably a little undervalued. And you know, he's good. Because Senga's not an ace, but Yamamoto is quite a bit better than Senga. You know, the comparisons are to Masahiro Tanaka, who also signed quite a big deal, and that was many years ago. I think it was like 10 years ago now, or like nine, something like that. So, you know, the comparisons are there to Tanaka, and Tanaka obviously signed a huge deal. Tanaka also, by the way, for what it's worth, if there are rumors that Tanaka might be looking to return to the U.S., which would be fascinating. would be pretty cool. I would love to see Masahiro Tanaka make a comeback.
That'd be interesting.
He's been pitching in the MPB since he left MLB, had a pretty good season last year. And I think Tanaka's only like 35 too, because he came over pretty young.
Yeah, he did.
But yeah, Yamamoto. I mean, there's not a ton to say that isn't speculation. Tanaka, by the way, is 35. He just turned 35 in November, and he's pitched the last few seasons for the Rakuten Golden Eagles. But he is currently a free agent. So who knows? Who knows? Or I guess I don't know if he's a free agent, but he could potentially leave and go back to the U.S. And so I guess we'll see. I'm fascinated to see where Yamamoto goes, and I think he is a legit ace and is going to be a legit ace for any of these seven teams. And I'm hoping that the mystery team Cardinals hop in and sign him, but they're definitely not going to. They don't usually pay that much money, but they should.
100%, yeah. I want the Phillies to get him, like, obviously, like,
right.
A rotation front three of Wheeler, Yamamoto, Nola is just like
dirty. It's dirty. Yeah,
it's dirty. And like, I think there's a lot of urgency now on Dombrowski with like Shohei going to the Dodgers. Like, hey, this is a team you're going to run into in the playoffs.
Yeah,
don't let them get Yamamoto. You know,
yeah,
spend the money. And like, that's the thing. John Middleton is willing to spend money if need be. So like, I like. Do I think they get him? No, I don't. But I like that they're looking at it, and that makes me hopeful that when Murakami or Roki come over, that they're going to go hard for this guy. But apparently, they've been scouting Yamamoto for years, which I did not know.
I didn't know that either. I definitely think we need to get one of the Cardinals need to get one of the Japanese guys. If it's not Yamamoto, then Sasaki, like one of the guys whose mom Lars Nootbaar's mom texts, right? Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
And you know, I've been happy, like, or like cautiously optimistic about the Cardinals offseason so far.
Yeah.
And they certainly have signed a ton of starting pitchers, and now they're working on the bullpen, and that makes sense. But a true ace is what's needed. I think Yamamoto's that guy. They don't appear to be in on it, so I don't think it's going to happen. I'm hoping that that's because they're saving their bullet for Sasaki next year. Like, same kind of thing, right? Like, that's what I... And again, and like, everyone loves Nootbaar. They all love him.
Yeah. They do.
They got to be using that to your advantage, you know? Everyone loves Lars Nootbaar. The onus is on a lot of teams to make sure the Dodgers don't, like, even if it's not, I mean, obviously it's good for the teams, right? He is a great player, but like, you right. got to make sure at this point that the Dodgers aren't the ones doing it, because they are.
You don't want them getting in here.
Yeah.
Especially with the team that they're already putting together.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially for an eight-year or nine-year contract where he's like, you know, you put him in a rotation next to Otani for six of those years, seven of those years. It's not what you want. I'm fascinated to see if the Mets pick him up and squander him for the next 9 years.
Yeah, I'm interested. I don't want that to happen. That would be terrible for him. Would suck for baseball in general. The Mets should not do anything. They should just sit quietly.
Dissolve the team. Yeah.
I mean, you already killed Jason Bay, and I still haven't forgiven them for that, because I loved Jason Bay growing up, and I will never, ever forgive the Mets. You know, just stay out of it, you know, and enjoy your off season of, you know, I don't know, you know, bring in someone else, you know, go get Blake Snell, have fun with Blake Snell. You can have Blake Snell.
It's, you know, it's fascinating that they're in on Yamamoto, and like, obviously Otani was paid a lot more money than Yamamoto is going to be. You know, even accounting for the deferrals, like just the hit and whatnot, and the fact that, look, if you're Steve Cohen, like $700 million, whether you're paying it tomorrow or you're paying it in 10 years. But the fact that they were out seemingly on Otani and then in on Yamamoto is like, well, you know, when you get one of the richest people coming into your team and then coming in and spending, and then you're like, well, maybe he's not going to spend this time. And it's like, well, okay, he will spend, just not on the guy who everyone wanted him to spend on.
Right.
Very confusing. I think it doesn't
make much sense.
I just don't get it. Cause everybody, I mean, you know, the fan base wanted to spend on Otani. Otani clearly is, you know, potentially the best baseball player to ever play the game. And certainly a guy who sells tickets, right? Like,
right.
I just don't get being out on Otani and in on Yamamoto. You know, if you're like, I get it for like the Red Sox who don't, you know, or even the Phillies who don't necessarily have the like the pocket cash and have more of a need for, hey, we need whoever we sign to be an impact immediately. Whereas Otani,
right,
like we said, is probably going to, you know, be an impact in a year because of the injury. But you know, the Jays went in on it. So the Jays, you can't fault for it.
No.
And the Yankees, as far as we know, were also in on Otani. So you can't fault them, but the Mets seemed to not be in on Otani and are in on Yamamoto. And I guess the Mets also have a bit of a win now mentality, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's confusing to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It really does not make sense.
Yeah, it feels like a pre-Cohen Mets thing, and like not a Cohen Mets thing, and maybe a Cohen Mets is maybe things haven't changed as much as we thought they had. Well, under Steve Cohen,
which I'm fine with. You know,
yeah,
keep the status quo.
Sure,
that's fine.
Stick to the stuff you know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, stick with what you're good at, and that's screwing people out of their money.
But I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, Ohtani sells tickets. You know, they could probably double ticket prices if Ohtani was on the team.
Like, oh my god, you know how much beer is going to go for at Dodger Stadium? Like $60 a beer now.
Yeah, which is what's like $5 more than it was last year.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't know. It's. I mean, that part of it is confusing to me. You know, the numbers of the Ohtani contract is why, you know, why they're able to even also be like, all right, now what about Yamamoto?
Right.
So, you know, as somebody, like, I don't even hate the Dodgers. It's just like, you can't let that happen. You know, like,
no,
you just can't.
Especially when it's this guy, like,
yeah,
it's Shohei Ohtani, man.
All right, staying with another international signing, KBO outfielder. Yes. Yeah, he's an outfielder. Jung Ho, I don't know why I was confused for a second. I'm like, I know he's an outfielder. KBO outfielder Jung Ho Lee signed a 6-year, $110 million contract with the Giants. I think that's got to be the biggest contract for a player coming out of the KBO, right?
Oh, 100%. I don't think there's ever been one that big.
Like, not even close. There's been guys like Shin-Soo Chu who signed, but I think it was like six. Was it 6-130? There's no way. Something like that. But that was after he spent a few years in the majors with Cleveland and Cincinnati. So coming straight from KBO, you know, it's interesting because I think we in America kind of see NPB as a quad A league. It's not quite MLB caliber, but it's better than triple A.
Essentially, yeah.
KBO is a step below NPB. KBO is almost feels triple A, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, not to disparage Korean baseball. It's just like, you know, even like the best Korean players a lot of the time go to Japan. Like,
yes.
You know, guys like Sungwon Oh, like, played in Japan for a couple of years before coming to the majors. Like, I, you know, and then guys will, like, and there hasn't been a ton of successful KBO, I mean, players in general, but especially hitters in the majors. I think Shin-Soo Chu is number one, like, probably without a doubt. And who's number two? Byung Ho Lee? Like,
maybe?
You know, like, Jung Ho Gung, maybe? You know, I mean, obviously his MLB career was interrupted by his DUIs and stuff. You know, there's no, probably not Byung Ho Park. Oh my god, I can't believe I'm not remembering the name of the Padres guy. Kim. Ha-Sung Kim.
Ha-Sung Kim. Yeah.
Ha-Sung Kim is like, he's really good, but his value comes almost entirely from his glove. He's an incredible defender and, you know, an average to below average bat. But his defense is so good that, like, it makes up for any issues with his bat. It's just like, that's like a top three, you know, KBO to MLB. Hitter career, and that's like not a great. I mean, he's good. Like I said, his defense is really good, but like, and he's active. So like, you know, who knows what his future looks like? But yeah, Lee, 6 years, $110 million. That's a lot for a guy who has no major league experience, and his experience is, you know, who
really knows what he's gonna do, you know?
Yeah.
It's a risk. It's a big risk they're taking here.
Because like Japanese hitters, and like, you know, you have guys like Matsui and Ichiro, obviously, and Seiya Suzuki. And like, you know, like those guys have come over and made an immediate impact. And, you know, I'm rooting for Jung Ho Lee. Like, I think it'll be cool and you know, probably be huge for Korea because they haven't had, I don't think they've really had a guy to rally around in the majors since Shin-Soo Choo. I must be forgetting somebody. Is there a pitcher? Hyunjin Ryu.
Ryu came over.
Obviously pitcher and you know, been very injured for a while, but that is that's maybe the last, you know, big KBO to MLB direct pipeline, like,
yeah,
hey, this guy is you know, a marquee player type guy. I don't know. And then the Giants as a landing spot.
That's a thing lately. They're not a popular landing spot.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting, right? Because
they offered the same contract to Shohei that the Dodgers did.
Did they? I didn't know that.
They did. Yep. Same deal. But they don't see. And I think it's, I don't want to say it's a problem with the city of San Francisco, but I think it's a problem with the city of San Francisco.
I don't think it's that. I think what happened is that they won a couple championships and they, you know, gave contracts to those players. They kept the band together and then the band aged out. You know, it's the same thing the Phillies did, right? It's where the right. Phillies were in the 2010s. After having, you know, that championship in 08, you know, and the Giants are, you know, just like, it's now coming to roost, especially because Buster Posey, you know, retired earlier than expected. And then, you know, you have Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belts and all that stuff. You know, it had that surprise success team, but aside from that surprise, like 106 win team or whatever, a couple of years ago, they're not a landing spot that's attractive. I don't think because of the city. I think just because of, like, do they have a commitment to winning? And it like, even in the year that they did win the division against, you know, the Dodgers monolith, it still didn't seem like that team had a commitment to winning. So I understand, you know, apprehension to go there. And you know, I think they have to fix that image, because, you know, in the 2010s, that was the dynasty, right? And I think they are a team, you know, you'll see teams do this quite often where they'll have some sort of dynasty and then they'll reward the dynastic players and then nothing good happens after that.
That was an issue with the old Phillies.
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, they gave the big contracts to Utley and Howard and Rollins and Hamels and Lee. And, you know, eventually the money runs out and the guys get older and you don't replace them quick enough. You don't move on quick enough.
Yeah.
And it hurts you.
Exactly. And,
you know, that's the one thing. So Ruben Amaro Jr., he does the morning show with WIP, and he said that one of his regrets was not moving soon enough, was not replacing the guys and building up the farm soon enough, because he thought there was still a contention window there, even though the Braves were getting younger with Freeman and Hayward and Tehran at the time, and the Nationals had Harper, who just came up. They signed Worf. They had Trey Turner coming up. Like, they brought in Scherzer. And well, you know, the Phillies were still trying to compete with a Chase Utley whose knees were not working properly, a Jimmy Rollins who couldn't stay healthy, and a Ryan Howard whose power was sapped.
Right.
Yeah, because the Achilles.
I think as a whole, everybody knew that the Phillies contention window ended when Ryan Howard's ankle broke, right?
Like, I didn't think it was over at that point, because they still were contending that following year. And honestly, had Howard, they were.
Hold on. Because they finished third in the division.
They did, but the way the season started is they had a shot. If I pull up
Yeah, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but I know they finished third because the Nationals won and the Cardinals played the Braves in the wild card game. So they finished
81-81, but they had Howard out for the first half of the season.
Right.
And Utley also, so Howard played 71 games that year. Utley played 83 games that year. Shane Victorino, well, he and Pence were traded at the deadline, but like the two big stars only played in those games that in limited games that year. Roy Halladay took a major step back that year.
Yeah.
That was when he had a 4 ERA. And then the following season was when I realized it was over, when Roy Halladay, after two pitches in his final start, was drenched in sweat and completely gassed and literally told Charlie Manuel, "I can't throw anymore. You need to take me out." If you want to see something depressing, watch Roy Halladay's final start. It is depressing to see what a legendary pitcher, what his final start looked like. He could not get the ball over the plate. He was done. He was drained. He literally told Manuel, "I can't pitch anymore. I'm done." And he retired.
Yeah.
Like, that was sad. That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so that's, you know, it's that is where it feels like the Giants are, and you know, maybe they have a quicker route to fixing it. And you know, I think obviously a big part of it is, again, they had that weird, incredible season, and then
yeah.
You know, the captain of their team retired like kind of out of nowhere, you know, like I don't think anybody expected Buster Posey to retire when he did, you know.
I wasn't shocked that he retired. Like he just adopted twins and like was so worried with COVID. It did not shock me when he retired, honestly.
He was 34 years old. Like it just like it I don't think it like it wasn't one of the things where I was like, oh, I guess this makes sense.
I think he wanted to retire as well, because he probably didn't have much left and he didn't want to start hurting his Hall of Fame chances by having some mid years at the end of his career.
Yeah, but I don't think he was going. I mean, and the thing is, he was coming off of a great season too, like an all-star season, a silver slugger. Like he was coming off
Way to go out.
That's true. It's just not a lot of guys do that. It's rare for you to see.
I mean, if you consider like the amount of catching he did took a toll on him.
Yeah, like, for sure.
And like, obviously, he didn't play at all in 2020, but like before that, you know, only 114 games in 2019, 105 in 2018, and like, being a catcher took a toll on him, and he knew it was time. But like, and again, he had the twins. But like,
I agree. It's just like, I mean, you know,
he was already on a Hall of Fame path as it was. Why not just call it quits here?
Yeah. And you know, Buster Posey. Look, Buster Posey played a lot of first base, but yes, he did do plenty of catching. That is true. It was also like it was a DH era NL. He could have just come back the next year and been the Giants DH.
Sure.
That's why. Like that was the whole reason. It was like you don't often see guys go out on top like that, being like,
yeah,
hey, like, because that was a vintage Buster Posey season. Aside from, he only played 113 games. Aside from that, it was pretty much a vintage season from him. And it was like, all right, now I'm out. And that kind of like, it kind of screwed the Giants. Like,
oh, which is
not his responsibility to not do that. But like, you know, Joey Bart had to start the next season. And like, even if Posey was like catching 40 games and DHing 100 games, like you're there to mentor Bart, you know, which they didn't have a mentor for him really. Like, and so like Bart then kind of doesn't become the player who the Giants needed him to be, which is
right
the next Buster Posey, you know, because he suddenly had to be a starter, which was not like, you know, I don't know. It was odd. And I think that's part of what has led to Giants woes where they're at right now. But you know, we'll see if they, you know, I think they just kind of have to right the ship and get, you know, just be able to convince guys like, hey, we're still the San Francisco Giants. Like, yes, we've had a couple of rough years, but that's, you know, we're still one of the most storied teams in the game. And
certainly, yeah,
we can still, you know, they still are something. The Red Sox to the Dodgers Yankees, you know.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. We got a couple of smaller teams with medium-sized moves here. I'll start with, I guess I don't want to call the Diamondbacks a small team. We'll stick in the NL West here because the Diamondbacks were the National League champions this year. Although with, you know, the Dodgers clearly do not want them to repeat. Lourdes Gurriel returning to the Diamondbacks, 3 years, $42 million with an opt-out after the second year. Hey, you know, good for him. That's a solid return. That's a, like I said, they were the champions last year. It makes enough sense to run it back, make some improvements, but like Gurriel had a solid enough season last year. Keep him around. Like, I think it makes sense. You know, it's what, 16 million a year. No, that's wrong. 14 million a year.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. 14, but 14 million a year for like a 2-win player is like solid enough, you know. I think that's a fine contract for a guy like that. The opt out is weird.
Yeah, the opt out's really weird.
And obviously they traded for Eugenio Suarez too. I think last week or 2 weeks ago. So that you know, that is where you're improving, right? You get a guy like Suarez and right. You know, maybe add some pitching to Gallo. And Kelly, because they added Eduardo Rodriguez, as well. So like that, you know, you have so Gallen, Kelly, Rodriguez. You know, Fott is the fourth pitcher, which is a much better place for him to be, at least at this point in his career. Nelson. You know, this is a like, it's hard to call him a sneaky good team considering they just won the National League, but I think they can still continue to be a sneaky good team considering the fact that they weren't expected to be as good as they were last year, and then just kind of running it back but with improvements.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah.
I think they're a solid wild card 3 team. Oh man, like the NL is so top heavy. Because it's literally Dodgers, Braves, Phillies, and then you have so either one of the Braves or Phillies gets that first wild card spot, and that leaves 2 wild card spots, and then whoever the heck is lucky enough to win the Central. Right. I mean, just looking at the NL right now, you know, I think the D-backs are still good enough to earn a wild card spot with what they've got, but like. This division's like this. The NL's bad outside those top 3 teams.
It's pretty wild, yeah.
It's really top heavy. And like, I mean, looking at the AL's a little bit better, but like baseball's really top heavy right now.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's, you know, gonna be. Like, I wonder if the CBA is going to try to fix that.
I don't think anything's changing. Well, the CBA's not up for another, few years?
It's definitely a few years, yeah.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a while of this, and it's going to be interesting to see, like, what changes with the next CBA to try and get more teams competitive. Because, like, it honestly feels like the NBA right now. You've got all these top-heavy teams in the NBA, and then... Like, the regular season doesn't matter until you get to the playoffs because you've got so many teams really making the playoffs. And then it's like, you know.
Excuse you, as the Eastern Conference in-season tournament champion Indiana Pacers will tell you, basketball mattered in December and November. I mean, look.
Who really cared about the in-season tournament, though? Like, I thought it was like, you know, sure, it was fine, but like, I wasn't that invested in it.
Well, it's because the Sixers lost.
I don't think I would have been invested in it if the Sixers even won. Like,
I think
great.
Honestly,
everyone's
like,
it's getting $500,000. Like, cool.
Yeah, yeah, and a trophy, and we'll see, like, you know, how that continues, like, over time. But like,
let me get my participation trophy. I would care about it if it guaranteed a playoff spot for a team.
That would be interesting. Yeah, that would be a cool way to.
That would get me to care. And like, if MLB wanted to do something like that, where you do an in-season tournament, and the team that wins gets a guaranteed playoff spot.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a high seed. It could be like wild card three, but it's a guaranteed wild card three.
I will say, though, like, as a fan of a team that has not had a ton of recent playoff appearances, and dominated in the in-season tournament, it was a lot. It was enjoyable basketball for me. I enjoyed all of it, and also, like, you know, again, as a Pacers fan, the Pacers had, I think, one national game on the schedule this year, and they forced three more by being really good in the in-season tournament, and, you know, turned Tyrese Haliburton into like a closer to a household name. You know, like, it was for me, I think it worked really well, but I see what you're saying. I think across basketball fans, right? You're not as big of a basketball fan as other sports, but across basketball fans,
I'm getting into it.
People who are like longtime basketball fans, a lot of those people were clowning on it, and then eventually were like, "Oh wait, this is fun." So
yeah.
But yes, I do agree. It's you know, it's almost as slog of a season as it is in baseball, and you know, to have like these top heavy teams where you know that it's going to be, you know, the Sixers and the Celtics and the, you know, or in baseball it's going to be the Dodgers and the Braves and the Phillies, and that's it, that's what you're getting, and you know, what's the point beyond that? I don't know. I don't know if there's a fix for it. I think part of it is just like, it's, I don't know. Maybe
you need a salary floor. Like, that's what we need. And like,
yeah. Well, I mean, the weird thing too is that the way they've all done it is so different, right? The Dodgers have obviously, you know, have a ton of money and have spent it well and have acquired all those people. The Braves just like, I don't know.
The Braves developed their guys, but like
they developed, yeah, most of their guys.
So they've also held a gun to all their Dominican players' heads and said, "Hey, sign this contract or we kill your family."
Yeah, Dominican player Matt Olson and Sean, Dominican players like Matt Olson and Sean Murphy.
Matt Olson, like, when you're coming from San Francisco or from Oakland and you see that much money, of course you're going
to
take it.
Right, right. Enough money to own the Oakland Athletics. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Right. Yeah.
But like, there needs to be some sort of floor to get these mid-market teams. And, like, I guess that takes us into the next thing here with what the Royals have been doing. Because the Royals are actually spending money.
Yeah, so that's fascinating because the Royals have, and we'll talk about it real quick here. The Royals signed Seth Lugo to a 3-year $45 million deal, as well as a couple $2 million deals for Michael Wacha and Hunter Renfro. I dropped this tweet from Jeff Passan in our show notes here, which basically has a list of all the teams that have spent the most money this offseason so far. By the way, according to Kyler McDaniel's projections, there's about $2 billion worth of deals left to come. I think Kyler McDaniel's projections were a little bit high, but if we want, let's run with that number, up to $2 billion. I mean,
someone's given a bag to Yamamoto and Bellinger, so it wouldn't shock me.
Right, yeah. The Blue Jays, Cubs, Mariners, Marlins, Padres, Rockies, Twins, and Yankees have not spent anything yet this offseason. Dodgers spent $717 million. Those are the kind of outliers. But Phillies, $172 million. So these are for like length of contract. Phillies, $172 million. Diamondbacks, $122 million, Giants, $113 million, Royals, $105 million, Cardinals, $99 million. Yeah. So the Royals are up there in terms of free agent spending.
Added just for this year, they've added $65 million in new payroll. Like, yeah. This is great to see the Royals spending because, like, why? Like, if you're going to own a team, like, there needs to be some sort of, like, competition clause. Like,
yeah.
You have to compete. You have to spend money, which is where salary floor comes in and where it's good, where it would be good for baseball. Because, like, the NHL has a salary floor. The NFL, salary floor. I think the NBA has
I mean, you have teams like the Oakland Athletics, right, where all of the new money that the Royals have spent in just this offseason for just this payroll. Year would have paid, I think, 1.5 times the A's payroll this year, something like that.
Dude, Shohei Ohtani... his yearly salary, well, before it got deferred, his yearly salary would have been more than eight other teams' payrolls.
Yeah. Well, I think his yearly salary, like his cap hit, right, with the $46 million,
is more than the Oakland A's
payroll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is where the floor needs to come in. But the problem with a floor, so like, I'm pro floor, but I'm anti cap because I'm a fan of a big market team that spends money. So unfortunately, you don't get the floor without the cap. That's the problem. And I don't think, I think baseball is at a point right now where the contracts are too insane that you cannot have a cap unless the cap is like $300 million.
Well, I mean, I think the cap, you know, you can have a cap with some grandfathered in clauses and whatnot. And then obviously, you know, the way the NBA cap works with supermax contracts and whatnot and et cetera, like you can certainly make it work and you know, have
NBA
it in such a way where
financials make absolutely no sense to me.
I don't know how they work.
I've tried to understand, but like,
I think you have to have a PhD in economics to understand.
Yeah. But like, if you make it like flat out, okay, all teams have a cap of $300 million. You have a floor of $120 million.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, why not? Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That will, or like 150. Let's meet there. 150.
Sure.
And like, it's not like these owners can't afford to spend the money. They can.
Yeah.
Spend
and
the money.
That's the best thing, right? Is that a lot of these you know, cheapskate owners, like, and then they, you know, are able to use that, like, you look
that
again,
goodwill from signing a free agent to bring fans to the park.
There's that, yeah, but like so like in the case of the A's, right? The A's spend no money, have a bad team, yep, and then are like, well, nobody's showing up to the games. Like, yeah, why would I show up to a games to a team that has no stars and loses 100 games? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, at least in this case, like if it's 150, like, yeah, you're not gonna get a show. I mean, you could get a Shohei Ohtani, but like if you can get a Cody Bellinger, you can get a star, you can get a former MVP on your team.
Right.
If we set this floor and make teams spend, instead of having the same teams finishing in last place or not competing. I'm so sick of seeing the A's, the Pirates, the just like these historic franchises sitting on their butts doing nothing.
But, you know, it's interesting that we use the Royals as the example here, right? Because, you know, Lugo, Waka, and who's the third guy? Hunter Renfro.
Yeah.
Those aren't world beaters who are going to make the Royals suddenly a good team, you know?
But if you consider how weak the Central is, they can certainly compete in it now.
Potentially. I mean, that is true.
And like,
yeah,
Bobby Witt is an absolute star. I love Bobby Witt Jr. That dude is a star. Vinny Pascatino, he comes back, dude. I think he's got a lot in him when
friend,
he comes
friend
back.
Friend of the podcast, Vinny Pascatino, yeah.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Dude, the Royals have a good core they're putting together. I think MJ Melendez is going to be a solid hitter.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, like,
you've got a bona fide star shortstop in Bobby Witt Jr. Spend money, get your team on the national map, and get people to know this kid, because he is unbelievable, and he is not talked about enough by casual baseball fans.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that, and. And, you know, it's interesting because I think the reason you kind of we brought up the Royals here is because before the podcast, I was saying my, you know, minor conspiracy theory here is that the floor is coming, like the Royals see the writing on the wall for a potential floor coming.
And just want to get
their money in now. Just be like, all right, we just want to have these contracts up, because like, $60 million to Hunter Renfro and Seth Lugo and Michael Waka and like, I think maybe one more player is like, I don't know. That's fine, I guess. You know, you could use that on just Shohei Ohtani, right?
Yeah.
not that Shohei Ohtani was going to sign with the Royals, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's I agree. It is good to see a team like the Royals, who are traditionally a small market team that doesn't spend money, you know, and also they're in a market that is suddenly getting an influx of viewership for their other sport. Hey, who's to say that Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift aren't going to go to a Royals game this year, right?
Like they probably could, dude. Go watch Bobby Witt Jr. He's a star.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I got nothing to add. You got your. we got a preview of next week's episode here.
Oh yeah, dude! I got so many grievances.
In case you have not listened for before this year, we tend to do an annual Festivus airing of grievances, which we hopefully will have for you next week. But it's gonna be a lot of Pat.
Hey, who knows? Maybe it's just be an hour of me ranting by myself. Who knows?
Yeah. Well,
I got a list. Worry. I'm checking it twice.
We've got that one in the can too. Don't worry.
Yeah.
all right. Well, that is the Royals, and that's that. And the last little one we have here, Jack Flaherty. I mean, there's a bunch of other small signings, but the last one we put on the list here is Jack Flaherty signing 1 year with the Tigers. I think it was $14 million. It's a nice little pickup as a Cardinals fan. You know, having watched a lot of Jack Flaherty pitch, like he's a perfect sort of cushion deal guy. You hope that he comes and has the same sort of dominance that he was able to show a few years ago, you know, in those brief spells. Was not able to really put it all together this year. But he's got the tools and the pieces, and if we just can get the health and kind of figure out what it was that made him, you know, a Cy Young caliber pitcher. If there was a first and second half Cy Young, he would have had the second half Cy Young in 2019 or whatever. And then, you know, obviously injuries. And
dude,
when
he had that second half in 2019, I was sold. I was like, this dude's legit.
I know.
Dude's gonna be a stud. And then he just fell apart. Because I had him in 2019 on my championship fantasy team because I picked him up after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And he went off. I'm like, dude, this dude's a stud.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's like, the pieces are there, right? If you can just put them all together right. And I don't know if, I'm not sure if Tigers coaching is the team to do it.
Probably not.
Kind of wish to some level that he had signed a 1 year pillow contract with the Dodgers to be their fifth starter, and then suddenly they fix him. And then he can pick up the 7 year deal afterward or whatever. But you know, maybe the low expectations will work for him, because that's the thing too, right? Like the Cardinals obviously expected him to be their future ace, and that just didn't materialize. And then the
didn't work.
You know, and he had a decent season this past year and then got traded to the Orioles, who kind of needed him to be, you know, if not an ace, at least a really good pitcher and, you know, pitch them into the end of the season. So nice thing about the Tigers is you have no expectations. So, you know, potentially that could be good for him. But I don't know. Wishing the best for Jack Flaherty with the Tigers. I'm hoping that he can turn it around and turn it into like a, you know, a nice 6 year $120 million next off season.
That's what I'd like to see.
I mean, pitching markets are so crazy too. Like obviously in the sim, which we'll I'm sure have an episode on in the new year, the pitching contracts were out of this world.
Insane.
but even in the real world,
Yariel Hernandez just got $38 million.
Rodriguez,
yeah.
But you gave that to him.
No, I didn't.
Oh no, sorry, you were getting him 36, right?
I was gonna give him 32.
32. That's right.
I felt comfortable at 32.
It's nuts. It's wild. So we'll see. We'll see. We will see. I'm hoping that next year's pitching market is just as crazy and Flaherty manages to cash out on it, because he's a good dude and I like him.
Definitely. I'd like to see it. He deserves it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, folks, that is going to do it for this episode. As I mentioned, next week is going to be our annual Festivus airing of grievances. I'm sure Pat is going to be on that. I'm not sure who is joining him.
I'm gonna do my best to get a great group together for this one.
Yeah, yeah. So
get some all timers in for this.
I'm guessing that our news segment next week, unless something crazy breaks, is just going to be me telling you a couple of things that happened. But yeah, Festivus airing of grievances, and then the week after that, we almost certainly won't have a regular episode. But again, unless something huge breaks. But what we do have is a couple months ago, Pat recorded an episode all by himself. What was it about, Pat?
I don't even remember. I remember rant. Oh, this is when the Shohei surgery came out.
Shohei surgery. That's what I thought. I remember.
So I was talking about the Shohei surgery, and then I spent like a good 20 minutes trying to prove people wrong about Kyle Schwarber.
How'd that
so
go?
There was that. Oh, dude, it was great. I made a compelling case. I still think I'm going to prove people wrong.
Sure. Well, I think Kyle Schwarber's working best to prove you wrong. But yeah. So
he's a good hitter.
Is he, though?
He's a good leadoff hitter.
Is he, though?
You're going to get me started, man.
The stats don't agree. That's all I'm saying.
Stats don't care about your feelings. I test.
That's true. Stats don't care about your feelings, Pat. So that'll be the week after. So the Christmas we'll have Festivus airing of grievances, or Christmas Eve, and then New Year's Eve we'll have that from the vault episode of. Certainly not evergreen content, but it's there for us to release. So yeah. So stay tuned for those. And that's going to be our holiday schedule. Then we'll be back with all of our regular episodes in the new year. I'm sure we've got a sim episode coming, although this is a weird sim.
That's why it's gonna be a great sim episode.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we gotta make sure Jory knows not to curse when he comes on to talk about the show. Hey, Otani. I think somebody has the clip of it. I think I'll just grab the clip and censor it.
That's fantastic.
Just drop it into the episode.
It's an all timer.
So yeah, we've got plans. We got plans coming for the rest of this off season. So stay tuned for that. And Pat, if I don't talk to you, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Thank you. You as well.
Yeah. And until next time, I got to do the outro here. Rain Delay Radio, executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I edited this episode. I also hosted it along with Pat. Our theme music was composed by Chuck Lees. Rain Delay Radio is every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Central Time. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye.